Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, December 17th. It's the Brian Lehrer Show, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Solstice, Party of the Air. Tonight will be the last night of Hanukkah, the eighth night, and with us for a few minutes is Andy Borowitz, best known for his satirical news stories that The New Yorker publishes several times a week, like the one from last week, headline, "Trump Fires Amy Coney Barrett. I hired you to get a job done and you didn't do it," the president told her. Or the headline about this announcement from the president, "Pardons will be given first to essential frontline criminals." You get the idea. But Andy Borowitz has also written about Hanukkah. So, hi, Andy. Happy Hanukkah. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Happy Hanukkah to you.
I'm glad the essential frontline criminals will get the first pardons. It's only fair, isn't it?
It is. You know, actually, I was thinking about Hanukkah because you were kind enough to invite me to the party today. And I was thinking about President Trump. And in a way, he's really gotten in the Hanukkah spirit, I think, this year. Because if you think about most election years, you have election night, and it only lasts one night. But Trump has made his losing the election last for 40 magical nights.
It's
so
a miracle.
That's a wonderful gift. It's a miracle. It's never been done before. And I think maybe, you know, thousands of years from now, there'll be some kind of menorah-like object that will celebrate Trump's 40 nights of losing, which I think has been a gift for all of us. It's been a rough year, but he gave us that beautiful, beautiful gift at the end of it. So I must thank him.
That's a challenge for all our visual design people out there. Design that piece, that menorah-ish thing that will recognize the 40 nights of losing the election for Donald Trump this year, inspired by Andy Borowitz. And I get it about Amy Coney Barrett getting fired. It's not like Trump didn't make it clear before he hired her what the job description was, right?
Trump might be the worst mob boss ever, right? I mean, he makes it very clear, as Tony Soprano would, what he wants to have done. And then nobody does it. And I mean, even Bill Barr, whose abilities to, you know, toady and ingratiate himself with Trump seemed unsurpassed. Even he is bailing at the last minute. So it's not, you know, I think he's a guy who's watched a lot of mob movies, and it's like me watching a lot of basketball. It doesn't make me LeBron James. You know, it's watching is different from doing.
Yes, and we should make it clear again, as we always do when Andy is on, that Amy Coney Barrett isn't really getting fired. This is satire. So we could say this is the real fake news. I saw an essay you published in the New York Times a number of years ago, and a version in Moment magazine that begins,
yeah,
"When I look back on my childhood, I think Hanukkah would have meant a lot more to me if I had been Jewish." Now, that's quite a way to start an article by somebody named Borowitz.
Yes, and if people have actually gotten a visual on me over the years, they might also suspect that I'm Jewish. Not to stereotype or anything, but I have some features which might lead one to believe, in combination with my last name, that I'm Jewish. And I am Jewish by birth, but I have to make clear, Brian, that you had many, many Jews to choose from for this segment. I think New York is famous for its Jews. And you chose the one who maybe knows the least about Judaism, because I grew up in Ohio. Not that that's a barrier to having a Jewish education, but my parents were really on the high end of assimilation. They were the waspiest Jews you'd ever want to meet, maybe waspier than actual wasps in some cases. To give you an example about another non-observance of a Jewish holiday that they did, you're familiar probably because you, I'm assuming you know about Judaism more than I do. You're familiar with the rituals of Yom Kippur, correct?
You mean like not eating?
Yeah, not eating. That's the main one. That's pretty much the only one. It's a form of atonement, as I've learned from
Wikipedia. It's not the only one, just to stave off all those emails and tweets I might get if I didn't say that. But yes, for a lot of people in America, it is the main one. Go ahead.
Well, my parents, and this is an absolutely true story, we were growing up in Cleveland, Ohio, Shaker Heights, to be specific, and on Yom Kippur, there was no way that we were fasting. And my mother was also not a big fan of cooking. So what we did on Yom Kippur is we actually drove about 30 miles out of town and went to a Swedish smorgasbord on Yom Kippur.
Oh, my.
And I've got to say, if you're not going to observe the fast, that's kind of an extreme way to go. Swedish smorgasbord. And I actually asked my mom about this some years later. I said, why did you do that? I mean, the typical Jewish thing to do, for example, on Christmas, so I understand, is maybe get Chinese food because, you know, the Chinese restaurant's going to be open. At least in my youth, that was a big thing. So why not just get takeout Chinese on Yom Kippur if you're just going to not observe the holiday?
Rather than go all the way to the Swedish smorgasbord.
Exactly. And what she explained to me was that they had to drive out of town because they didn't want to, like, go to some Chinese restaurant in town and be spotted by someone else and be outed for having broken the fast. And I pointed out, if some other Jew is at the Chinese restaurant, they really don't have a leg to stand on because you can just say to them, well, what are you doing here? So I didn't really understand the extreme precaution of going to the Swedish thing. But that gives you an idea of the kind of grounding I had as a member of the tribe. It wasn't very good.
Did any of this change and evolve for you as a grown-up when you could decide whether or not to celebrate for yourself?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, the typical thing that happens is that somebody like me who was brought up without any Jewish education then rebels and joins a klezmer band and becomes a super Jew, and that did not happen. We have, I would say, a very secular Chrismica tradition in my home. You're familiar with Chrismica, right? I mean, it's like it's this kind of hybrid.
It's like those holiday cards with a tree and the menorah.
Exactly. We're not offending anyone, or maybe we're offending everyone. I'm not sure.
Everyone. Everyone.
Everyone. Certainly, a lot of your listeners were probably offending, but we have, you know. The thing about Christmas versus Hanukkah, Christmas is a big deal, obviously. Hanukkah, traditionally, and again, this is from my understanding from Wikipedia, was a very minor Jewish holiday. The big ticket Jewish holidays are the high holidays in the fall and then Passover. And then Hanukkah is kind of like Arbor Day. It's not really a big deal. And in America, because Christmas was so heavily commercialized, the Jews saw Hanukkah as kind of a branding challenge. It's like, can we elevate Hanukkah so that it competes with Christmas? And so that's why we do all this, and we give out a presents and we light the candles. So we have a Chrismica tree that involves, it's a beautiful Christmas tree with lots of ornaments. We don't have a creche or anything religious like that. But then we do have a Star of David, a blue Star of David that's illuminated with an AC adapter on the top of the tree. So it's both. And then we do actually have a separate menorah, and we light the candles every night. And I am not, because I didn't go to temple past fifth grade, I'm not great with the prayers, but I have belatedly discovered a great online rabbi for my family, who is the actor Jack Black. Jack Black is Jewish, and he's really Jewish. If you go on YouTube, you can learn the lighting of the candles, the candle lighting prayers from him. He sings it. He's a great singer, as you know. And he also does a great version of Hanukkah, Hanukkah, Come Light the Menorah, which is available on Spotify. And I think that if you missed out on a Jewish education, as I did growing up, there's no better portal to the world of Judaism than Jack Black, because he makes the whole thing so much fun.
All right. Well, how about that? Well, satirist Andy Borowitz from The New Yorker likening Hanukkah to the Jewish Arbor Day. Never heard that one before. And thanks for coming on with us. Happy eighth night of Hanukkah.
Same to you, Brian.
Up next, look who's here. It's Maeve Higgins, comedian and regular opinion writer for the New York Times, who has brought a very unusual holiday gift. Hi, Maeve. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning. Hi. So, great to hear you.
Now, you brought as a gift questions from the U.S. naturalization citizenship exam.
Yeah, I'm calling it my Quizmas gift because it's a bit of a quiz, especially if you were born in America, because all of us immigrants, if we want to naturalize, we eventually have to take this test, and they've just made it even harder.
So here's how we're going to play this, listeners. We are looking for one U.S.-born person, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, I think one of the parting gifts of the Trump administration to make America confusing again. And let's see if you were born here, if you can answer these questions that are now required to become a naturalized American citizen. So who wants to play? Who's brave enough? Who thinks you know civics? Any, like, history, American history professors want to call in? Maybe we could set the bar a little lower than that. You don't have to be an American history professor. But if you think you could pass a citizenship exam for your own country where you were born and grew up, call in, and we're gonna play with Maeve Higgins. You want to give us just like the 30-second version of the background on this? Is this really Donald Trump and Stephen Miller just making it harder for immigrants in yet another way?
It does have the Stephen Miller little ghoulish touch on it, for sure. There are now 128 questions that you have to learn, and that's up from 120. And they've made it a little bit more political than it usually is. So there's always been a test, and there's tons of things that immigrants have to do to, you know, become part of the U.S. As you know, we have to watch The Real Housewives of New Jersey. That's on the test. We have to agree to eat sweet food during the savory course at Thanksgiving. But on top of that, we have all these civics and history questions. And things like, what is Alexander Hamilton famous for, Brian? I'm sure you know he's famous because he's on Broadway.
Oh, I thought that's right. I thought he's famous for having being played by Lin-Manuel Miranda. That's what
that's
he's famous for. And maybe being the first Treasury Secretary, but he's not so famous for that.
Right, that's down a bit lower. Now, this isn't an easy test. In fact, one of our latest, Tommy Tuberville, he's a senator-elect. He would have actually failed two of the questions. He recently got mixed up for the U.S.'s reasons for joining in World War II. And he also got mixed up about what the three branches of government are. So,
wow,
you know, and he's an elected. Now, he did play football for a long time. And from what I understand, that's a very American game. And it really, you get a lot of bashes to the head. So maybe some civics fell out there. So we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But, oh, Brian.
The three branches of government. There's the three branches of government. That's Trump, Barr, and Conway, right?
Well, Barr is gone. So I think it's just Ivanka.
Yeah,
I think
Conway's gone too. All right, Eugene and Weehawken is the brave soul who's going to take this five-question quiz from the new U.S. citizenship exam. Five,
yeah,
Eugene, five. We're going to see what your percentage is after five.
Okay,
okay? You ready?
Okay,
and Maeve,
we have to do this.
And Maeve, we have to do this quick, just because we have other guests lined up. Okay.
Ready, Eugene?
Okay. Yes.
Who does a U.S. senator represent?
He represents the citizens of an individual state.
Correct. It used to be all people of the state. Now it's changed to just citizens. So I don't know where that leads me.
Oh, wow.
Okay, Eugene, name one power that is only for the federal government.
The Department of Environmental Protection.
No, I'm sorry, you're wrong. The federal government can print money, they can raise an army, or they can set foreign policy. But the EPA, as far as I know, It is part of the federal government, but it's been largely...
Such a vague question, right? One power that is only for the federal government. It's one of the reasons we're doing this segment, to show how bad the question is. All right, may give him a quick couple of examples of what they're looking for there.
You can regulate the mail, you can make a treaty, raise an army, or print money.
All right, next question.
Okay. Eugene, name one example of American innovation.
That's another terrible question.
NASA, the space program.
Well, one of the acceptable answers is something that the space program managed to do. Can you think of one thing?
I'll give you a clue. They put men on the moon.
Yes, exactly.
Wait, you mean they would accept the moon landing, which didn't really happen, by the way. We covered that on the show. But the moon landing they would accept, but NASA and the space program they wouldn't?
They would just probably look at you blankly. You have to say the moon landing. You could say skyscrapers, too. Or you could say Zapp's chips, I think, because those are American. Okay, do we have time for one more question? Or else, I don't know that Eugene is going to be allowed to stay in the country, honestly.
I think we're going to have to kick him. Eugene, where were you really born?
I was born in Plainfield, New Jersey.
Uh-huh. Do you have a birth certificate to prove that?
I don't know where it is.
I think you were really... Well, never mind. All right, last question.
Okay, this one is tricky. Okay, why does each state have two senators?
Because for each state in the in the United States, two senators represent the citizens from the state, where we have 13 we have representatives that are based on population. The senators are based on individual states. Each state gets two.
I will accept that. Yes, it's to ensure equal representation. You know,
I just want to say that my mother's caregiver is from the Gambia, and she is studying for the test, and she has worked so hard, but she just learned that there's going to be new tougher questions. So we're going to beef her up, and we want her to pass.
Okay, that's good. Eugene, that's wonderful, but listen, you need to do your homework before you help this lady.
That's right, because, you know, she's going to stay here.
I could see
what's going to happen. She's going to wind up staying here, and they're going to send you to Gambia. So. Eugene, thank you. Thank you very much.
Good job, and good luck to her.
And Maeve Higgins, thank you very much. Always
thank
fun.
You, happy holidays.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.